We're gonna get this place hot and clammy. Just like the new boss like it.
Hello and welcome, everyone.
Okay.
Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 70.
Woo!
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I'm your host, Aaron Roden.
Nobody beats me in the kitchen.
And, of course, nobody beats me in the kitchen. But this is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Oh, man. We've got a great show for you today, planned for you today. It is, it's loosely planned. There's a loose script to things. There are some questions written down, some talking points, but for the most part, flying by the seat of my pants here, people. Flying by the seat of my pants. We've got, like I said, great show. Mr. Kevin Heider. Will be joining us shortly here in the dining room studios, the Greenwood neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. We've got a couple iTunes reviews to read for you. And we're featuring music today by a band by the name of Genital Hospital. They've got a new EP out called Ball My Children. Every time I say it, I laugh. It's actually really good stuff, though. It's good stuff. So, definitely not a show that you want to be playing with your children in the room. I'll just put that out there. Anyway, adults only. This is the adults only section of the iTunes podcast. We've got some things to talk about here today. Got some things to talk about. I've been fine, thanks for asking. I just living my life, man. You know, with no regrets. Well, I don't know about that. I don't know. I still don't know if I've won the Mega Millions lottery. I haven't checked that yet. Checked that ticket. But I did go the route of promising the guy who sold it to me, sold me the ticket, that I would split it with him if I won. But if I do win, I don't know if that's actually going to happen. Who knows? There might be a lot of taxes to pay if that happens. So we'll see. So dude at the AMPM gas station / Quickie Mart, we'll see what happens. But I think it's funny because I think people do that just to get some good karma points. Just to rack up some good karma, so maybe it'll be easier for them to win the lottery. I think that's where that all stems from, isn't it? Isn't it? We all saw that movie with Nick Cage and who was that? Helen Hunt, something like that. I can't remember. Maybe it was Meg Ryan. Who knows? Anyway, yeah, we've got some stuff to talk about. There, for the parents out there, I know that a lot of people that listen to the show are kidless, but I do have a child, so, that's something that plays into my life from week to week, of course. I mean, that keeps you really busy. Oh, super busy. Super busy when you have a kid. There are so many things out there for children now these days that everybody's got to have one of these, vaporizers or whatever they are. These little, you pour water into it and it makes this vapor, this water vapor. Our daughter has been kind of sick lately, and so Mairead goes out and she buys this vaporizer thing. We used it for all of 5 minutes. Same was like, excuse me. Excuse me, man. God, do I burp a lot? I'm most human bodies are made up of 90% water. My body is made up of 80% gas, and then 10% water, and then 10% just tissue, mostly fat. mostly fat, but mostly gas. Jeez. I've been noticing that lately. I burp a lot during this show, and I apologize, man, because that is just disgusting. Anyway, there are so many things out there that parents just need to have, right? You always hear about this stuff, you know, like the vaporizer that I was just talking about. You know, when your kid's sick, you got to have one of these things in the room going off all the time. We literally used it for about 5 minutes. Thing was like $60. $60 for this thing that we only used, you know, once for 5 minutes. Now we can't return it because it's been used already. Yeah. So now what I'm doing is I'm looking at these things, and I'm trying to gauge how useful they are by inserting some sort of like post-apocalyptic scenario. Like because the apocalypse is coming, right? Right, everybody? Everybody knows that, right? We keep on hearing about it. What kind of apocalypse? We don't know yet. Maybe a zombie apocalypse, which would be kind of, I don't know. I watch a lot of those movies. It might be kind of fun. I don't know. I need to start stocking up on like guns and bullets though, because I don't have any. But I do have a BB gun. I got a BB gun that I shoot those frickin' woodpeckers with every summer or spring that come back. I don't kill them. I scare them away. So PETA, hold on to your shorts. Anyway, so I've been looking at this stuff that we've been buying for our child, and I'm saying to myself now, would this be useful in some sort of apocalyptic scenario? Like, does she really need this thing? Like, this big Maraid brought this thing home the other day. Some big like jungle gym thing. They sit in it. There's a seat in the middle, and then all these things. Like the seat spins around, and you can play with all these little different little PlayStations around the chair. It's very brightly colored. There's a bunch of shit hanging from it on hooks and little stuffed animals and stuff. Boy, that sounds like a movie like Saw or something. Just a bunch of hooks hanging around. Halloween. It's Halloween. Yeah. That's scary. That's some scary stuff. Well, so I'm looking at this stuff, and I'm like, okay, well, are we really going to be using this stuff when you know, the bomb drops or something like that, or the sun explodes? Are we really going to need this? Probably not. Probably not. You know, she'll probably just, we'll be giving her, like, clods of dirt to play with at that point, right? Radioactive dirt. Yeah, there's all this crap. And we don't need this stuff. I mean, I didn't have some of this stuff when I was growing up. My parents definitely didn't have that stuff when they were babies. And it's, you know, I would call it junk science that goes around because people don't know what causes, what is it, sudden infant death syndrome. Or something like that, you know? Nobody knows what causes that. I, as a baby, was put on my stomach because that's what you were supposed to do. Now you're not supposed to put your child on their stomach. They're supposed to sleep on their back. And now a new study came out. You can't even have a blanket in the crib with your kid. You know? You can't have anything in there. They sell you this stuff. They sell you this stuff for your crib, these bumpers and the pillows and the stuffed animals and all that stuff. It all comes in one package now. With a comforter and sheets and stuff like that for the crib. But you can't put anything in there.
No, Kelly Clarkson!
What the hell is the deal with that, man? Kelly Clarkson, indeed. Jeez, I just can't figure it out. I mean, it's all money-making scheme, right? Enough to make you angry. Yeah, I'm so angry. I'm so angry today because the Seahawks are playing right now. And if I sound a little bit preoccupied, it's because I'm watching this terrible game at the same time that we're recording this show, and we're losing again and again and again. Man, it's hard to be a sports fan in Seattle. I'll tell you what. Another thing, you know, you're not supposed to let your kids watch TV now until they're two. So, you know, sometimes I'll have the news on. Maraid's like, hey, watch her, you know, she'll, my daughter, man, she'll gravitate towards the TV if it's on. She will. She'll just look at that. And she won't be able to tear her eyes away from the moving pictures, right? much like me. Yeah, you're not supposed to let your kid watch TV until they're the age of two because it may cause autism, right? And they don't know what causes autism. They're just throwing things out there, you know. Well, it might be this, might be this, might be this, right? And so now, yeah, she can't watch TV, but because they say it's overstimulating. There's so much stuff going on, right? Well, Mairead brings home this jungle gym that I just told you about, and it's got colors all over it and these little hanging things off of it and things that make lights and noises and everything like that. What's the difference? That's my question. What's the difference between this jungle gym thing and letting your kid watch the nightly news with you, or a football game for that matter? You know, it's all flashing. It's all colors. Who knows? Maybe they can just they can look at it at their own speed. Maybe that's the thing. I don't know. God, am I a terrible father? Am I just a horrible father? I almost said the F word there. I'm trying not to use the F word as much. If you could tell, I think I've mentioned that before. It hasn't been working though. I think the first word that my daughter says is probably going to be the F word, or it's going to be GD. You know, God damn it. I gotta start watching my language. I gotta make some changes in my life, and I'm trying, people. I'm trying. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to something a little bit lighter, shall we? Shall we get to something just a little bit lighter, on the lighter side of things here? We've got a couple of really great reviews on the iTunes page, and like always, we want to urge you, the listeners, to go to the iTunes page if you do subscribe to us via iTunes, and please leave us a star rating or leave us a review, a short review, because this stuff really does help us out. I say this all the time; it really helps us out with getting guests on the show. I mean, this is what they look at. iTunes has become the place to get podcasts, right? And this is where PR people and AR people, they all look at iTunes to see how much ratings you have, how many ratings you have, and how many reviews you have, and what the reviews say when you're in contact with them to get new guests on the show. But we got a couple of really good ones. So this one from Stay Putnik. Aaron really knows what he's doing and really has a talent for getting interesting guests into the dining room studios. You won't be sorry. So thank you, Stay Putnik, however you say that. And this one is a great one. We just got this yesterday. I started with TBTL, which I'm still a firm believer in, moved to the Grapes of Rad when Luke had them on, and now that Noisebeam comes around, I'm discovering I like podcasts from Seattle. Aaron talks to a lot of great people, has some amazing interviews, and generally lives in my ear holes for an hour plus once a week. I actually didn't subscribe after my first listen, but you should. Give him a shot, listen to two episodes, and you will be happy for the rest of your life. Wow. The listener, Todd, thank you so much. That is awesome. Both five-star reviews right there. And you can do the same thing, and we'll read those on air when you do. So yeah, go to iTunes, give us a thumbs up on Stitcher, Zune Marketplace. I believe you can leave reviews on there as well, but I think we don't have any on that one. Although I don't really check that too much. But don't tell Microsoft. Anyway, we got a great show for you guys. Thanks for listening to me rant a little bit here. The comedian, Seattle comedian Kevin Hyder, and runner of things at the People's Republic of Comedy open mic, and also the comedy show Laugh Hole here in Seattle, which they've got a couple of great shows coming up. He's going to be dropping by here, Dining Room Studios, here in just a moment. So let's get to that. But first, let's listen to this song. It's called .19 by Genital Hospital. Off their new EP, Ball My Children. You can find Genital Hospital. Let's see. Look at this. I got everything queued up today. This is amazing. Genitalhospital.bandcamp.com. You can check it out there, and you can also buy the EP for $4. That's a pretty good price for this. Good solid punk rock right here, guys. Good solid lo-fi punk rock. I'm really impressed with this stuff. And I think you're gonna like it. So this is .19, and we'll be back with more of the Air Raid podcast with Kevin Hyder coming up in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. All right, we are back. That was Genital Hospital from here in Seattle, Washington, with their new EP called "Ball My Children." I'm sorry, a common acquaintance of ours, Chaz Roberts.
Yes,
plays
yes.
bass in there. Joining me here in the dining room studios is Mr. Kevin Hyder.
Hello, hello, world.
How are you, sir?
Excellent.
Good.
Fantastic.
Good. Thank you so much for coming on the Air Raid podcast. I really appreciate it. And you were just on Nancy Guppy's show.
I was.
Recently. Nancy Guppy was on last week
mm-hmm.
on this show.
I
talked to her a little bit about how we might have to be enemies because uh-huh. there's been a lot of crossover.
On the two shows.
On the two shows,
right.
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And so anything bad you want to say about Nancy Guppy, you should do so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
By
all means,
person.
We should start a feud. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Working with that organization was unbelievable. No, they were all really sweet. They were all great.
They messed up the craft services table.
Yeah. yeah. Messed like it up so bad it didn't exist.
Moldy
That's how
cheese.
Bad they messed it up.
Yeah, yeah. Rotten fruit. Guppy.
Guppy.
Damn it. Damn it. Okay, well, hey, Kevin Hyder.
Yeah.
You are, let's see, Seattle comedian.
Yes.
Yeah. You run, or are you part brainchild or full brainchild of People's Republic of Comedy?
Well, People's Republic of Comedy is a comedy collective.
Okay.
So
okay.
I would say that I have an administrative role in the organization.
Gotcha.
Artistic director would be a label that I suppose could be applied to what I do.
Artistic
although,
director, I like that.
Yeah, it sounds official.
I think I'm going nice. To start calling myself that.
Do it. Do
artistic
it.
Di- director artistic, of the
if,
Air Raid
if the
podcast.
World is a stage, then we're all artistic directors of our own performance.
Right, right, yeah. Yeah. So how did that so we'll talk about Laugh Hole here in a little bit, but People's Republic of Comedy, this mm-hmm. Comedy collective here in Seattle. How did that whole thing get started? Who came up with the idea? Were you the brainchild for that?
You know, it was just kind of the universe just kind of spit it out.
Quite spiritual.
Yeah, I started doing, we're getting deep on this show, right?
Were you smoking a lot of marijuana at the time?
At the time. No, just before the show, but okay. But not back then. I started performing stand-up 5 years ago, just started going to the open mics at the comedy clubs. And it kind of came from a background. We were talking just before the show about how we both kind of are from Seattle and kind of lived through the grunge experience and the Almost Live experience and that whole thing.
Right.
And just kind of as I was performing in those clubs and whatnot, just kind of realizing this is fun. I love doing this, but I'm not performing for the audiences that I necessarily want to be performing for.
Now, is that because, and it seemed, this is something that I asked Nancy last week too, is that it always seemed that the Seattle comedy scene was very, very small. It seems like it's growing a little bit right now, but it always seemed very, I've never been associated with the comedy scene here in Seattle at all, but back in the 90s and stuff, it was basically, for me, growing up over on the Kitsap Peninsula, it was Almost Live, and that was it. That was was going on in Seattle in comedy.
Yeah.
Is it expanding now? Because I know that a bunch of the clubs, the comedy clubs here in Seattle, had closed down, and now the only one, isn't it the only one that's open right now is Comedy Underground?
Oh, no.
Underground?
No, there's Comedy Underground. There's Parlor Live, which is Bellevue.
Well, that's Bellevue.
Really.
And
then
Laughs
and Kirkland.
And then Laughs and Kirkland,
But those would all be considered Seattle clubs,
right.
Essentially.
Okay.
So, or Seattle Market, you know.
Okay.
The comedy scene just, you know, has booms and busts, just like just like anything. So I would say at the time there really wasn't a lot going on comedy wise outside of the comedy clubs when I was starting out. I was approached by the Sunset Tavern. I had opened for a friend of mine's punk band there one night, and the guy who books that club said, hey, we'd love to have a comedy night here maybe once a month. Would you be interested in doing that? And so I said, sure, that sounds great. And we started the Ballard Follies is what we called it. And it was just a comedy showcase show at the Sunset Tavern. And we performed, once a month for audiences of, seven or eight people. About as humble beginnings as you can have.
And
just kind of did the slog over and over again, but learned how to, put up a good lineup, how to, run a good show. And then around the same time, we got approached by another club up on Capitol Hill, the Capitol Hill Arts Center, and they said, we would love you guys to do a comedy show here. So I approached some other comedians and said, hey, do you guys want to all get together and run this show? And they seemed to be interested in that. So we did the first Laugh Hole six years ago, actually, is when we did the first Laugh Hole.
Okay.
I think it was really exciting. A lot of comedians who were sort of my same age group and background kind of were like, oh, cool, we can put together a cool sort of rock clubby or experimental theatery type stand-up show in this space, and kind of gravitated towards it. And so the organization has swelled and has contracted and swelled and contracted, and we have just gotten this last year has been an amazing year of a big swell.
It's definitely starting to come into its own. You got some big shows coming up.
We do
that you're doing at Laugh Hole. So what, I guess, what came first, People's Republic of Comedy or Laugh Hole?
Laugh Hole was the show.
That was the first kind of incarnation of this group.
Right, and then we kind of started putting together a lot of comedians kind of started putting together other alternative shows around the area, and all thought, why don't we put a common sort of presented by a production name on these shows,
because
a similar feel and are kind of in line with our mission statement as of at that time undefined, but what we were trying to do. So we were like, let's call it People's World Like a Comedy, and the shows that are produced under the umbrella of this name have this similar similar ideology behind
them. Right. And you do open mic up at what's the coffee
right
shop?
Now, yes. Today we do every Friday night we have an open mic at People's Republic Cafe up on Capitol Hill.
Gotcha.
And
which I've been to before.
Yeah, it's
had a great time too. It was
super
pretty cool.
Fun show. Yeah, it's kind of the highlight
packed.
Of my week.
It was
week.
Packed when I was there. Is it usually pretty good attendance?
It usually is pretty good. Last night we had a smaller audience than we're used to, and it's funny that I say that because there were still 35-40 people in a coffee shop that's not much bigger than this dining room, living room
area totally.
So it's like for me to be like pretty small audience last night, only 40 people, was kind of like
if the windows are fogging up on the inside,
it's a good show.
It's a good show. There's enough people,
something's
in there.
Happening right. There's a happening occurring, and that's pretty cool. If you can produce window fog, you're in the middle of a happening.
Exactly, that's how you should gauge every show. Exactly. From now on,
how much window fog? Oh, that was a pretty good show then.
I could write my name on the window.
Yeah.
Or make one of those little baby footprints on the side of your hand.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
So cute.
I love that.
So cute. So, how did you get started in comedy? What kind of brought you into this? Because normally, I'm a big listener to Mark Maron's podcast, WTF. Mm-hmm. Right? You've heard that. I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
And it seems like most comedians out there have some issues.
Oh yeah.
Right, and that's how they get into it. Because they just want to either talk about the issues or they want to make it normal for them.
Yeah.
So what happened in your life?
There's a lot of stuff. So who touched me is what you're asking me.
Who touched
me and showed you on this doll? Is that what this doll is doing on the
table
right
here? How many girlfriends did you have that told you it's not you, it's me, before you became a comedian?
That's a whole other conversation. I don't know that there was if that's what we're digging into is my sordid past. I don't know necessarily that there was a thing. I mean, I think we're all broken people. I think that's a foregone conclusion. So I think how broken you are isn't necessarily an important conversation. We're all just broken. So what does it matter? You know what I mean? The shit doesn't work. So
right. Yeah.
And then I just think that there's certain personality types that recognize that and go, that should be something that should be showcased because the world needs to know that, that I am broken, but also that they're broken too.
And I want to be the guy that points it
and
out.
I want to be the guy that turns the stage lights on them. Says, how broken are you? You just laughed at that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
You're a conscientious contributor to this performance.
So what got you into it, though? Had you always been a fan of stand-up?
I've answered this question in varying different ways, but kind of come to the conclusion. I think I probably started out summer camps. I was a program director for camps, and
really?
So I was the person that was responsible for coming up with the sketches and games that surrounded those sketches, and essentially just kind of entertaining 250 junior high kids for a week, and it was just I would put together these just ridiculous over the top programs. One of the programs that we put together was like we did the postquels, the last three episodes of the Star Wars trilogy after the Empire had been defeated. And so they set their sights on less lofty goals, and that was taking over Camp Spalding, right? So we basically followed the exact same plot line of the Star Wars trilogy, but in a much less ambitious way.
Yeah.
We had Darth Brooks was our evil overlord, and we had Boutros Solo was our Han Solo character, and you know what I mean? We had all these people, and then, in the process, we just put together these ridiculous, things for these kids to do. We mounted toilets on skis and made the world's largest slip and slide and had toilet ski races down the hill. You know what I mean? Just insane stuff, and somehow wove it into a storyline that happened over the course of a week. And it was like, this is production on a pretty massive level.
Did you put the toilet seats back on the toilets after you're done using them, or were those just specifically for
the
skiing?
Seats were removed because they were dangerous. I mean, we had 13-year-old kids sitting on 100-pound porcelain thrones being pushed down 100 yards, slip and slide, by their peers. It was insane, some of the stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So we did some crazy stuff. But yeah, that really just kind of got me into sort of gave me a love for the theatricality and ridiculousness of doing things on a grandiose, crazy scale.
Had you ever been into improv?
Yeah. So then when I got into college, I actually...
Where'd you go to college?
Whitworth College in Spokane.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, smaller liberal arts school out there. And myself and a group of friends in college started the improv group at that school that still exists today, actually. We were, we were the founding members of that. And,
oh, cool.
And I'm still actually pretty close and work with some of those people who have moved to Seattle and are now... or Los Angeles and are actually working actors or... you know, comedians and things like that. So it's kind of cool to be able to be like, hey, you know, I started an improv group with you 20 years ago in Spokane, Washington, and here I am performing on this show with you this evening. So it's, it's kind of cool.
So that had been kind of something that you just got interested in when you went into college? I mean, after you had done this with the kids and stuff at the camp that you worked at, like, you just kind of felt the need to get up in front of people and try to make them laugh?
Well, yeah, to that extent, yes.
Yeah.
I didn't go into college with theater aspirations. I was a philosophy major, so I was pretty interested in that whole end of things. But yeah, the improv was kind of just a way to blow off steam and to perform and do some fun stuff. And
what was it like your first time doing something like that, getting up in front of a crowd and trying to
it's very different. Improv wasn't that intimidating.
Because you're there with a group
with a group of people. So
you can always blame somebody else.
Oh, yeah. And you should. I mean, that's the whole...
It's Terry's fault for fucking that one.
Right.
Oh, thanks, Terry. Way to gaff out on that one. That's that's my go-to name for everybody that fucks something up.
Oh, mine is Steve.
Steve?
Good. Yeah.
Like okay, Steve. That's a good one, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just really enjoyed improv and then continued doing improv for like the next 10 years around Seattle and with varying different groups. Going out and doing, you know, everything from senior homes to high school proms. Did quite a few proms. Valentine's Day, desserts. We're bringing in the improv group from such and such to perform.
Oh my god! What's that like doing a group? Let's start with old people homes. What's it like doing an improv?
Old people are just really happy you're talking to them. It's the easiest audience in the world. And all you have to do is just think, hey, there's 150 of my grandma and grandpas out there. I just need to stand on... They're so proud of you anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah. They're proud that you showed up. And you're on the stage and you just have to be nice do some silly, you know, sketches. And they're just delighted.
Right.
High school kids, on the other hand, are completely...
That's got to be tough, man.
Oh, yeah. And they don't want to be there. Tough. You know, they're like, this is the stupidest thing. It's my prom night. My dress should be over there. What the hell am I doing? You know, having these idiots try and make up funny sketches for me. And so,
oh my God,
that's probably, I would say, about the most brutal audience because they don't want to be there. It's like they're in an assembly that they just, you know, they're in an assembly, but it's not during school hours.
Well, plus in high school too, like everybody's too cool to be in assembly. You know?
Yeah. And I don't blame them. I'm on stage going, I'm too cool for this too, but I can't, there's no way I can convey that to you. So I'm just going to be an idiot and pretend I'm a banana for this sketch, you know?
Oh man, that's gotta be just soul crushing sometimes. What was it like, when you made the switch to actually doing stand up?
It's a big change.
Right, because now you don't have a group, you don't have a Terry that you can Steve.
Steve's at the improv theater doing his improv show. He's not at this club.
Asshole.
it's huge. So 6 years ago, I just kind of was like, I've always wanted to try stand up. I don't know why I haven't. And I was finally like, I'm going to make a New Year's resolution. I scoped out. I went to a lot of different open mics and kind of checked out what was going on. And I finally said, you know what? Once a week for a year, I'm going to go to an open mic and perform a new 3-minute set, you know, every week for a year. That's my New Year's resolution. which was a pretty ambitious New Year's resolution, and I lasted about 3 months before I started recycling jokes a little bit.
But
still, 3 months is pretty good. If you figure 3 minutes once a week for 3 months, you've got by the end of that, you've got a 40 minute set,
yeah.
Which means you've got about 5 minutes of good stuff. That's great.
Yeah.
So, it's a good way to do it, is just to really set a bar for yourself and be like, I'm going to try that and see how close.
Yeah. What was it like though? I mean, you already had this base of being able to stand up in front of people and do this thing with a bunch of other people.
And
so that must've translated a little bit with, standing up there by yourself, but still, I mean, that's gotta be,
I thought it would help. It doesn't. And I tell this to, we just started our education program this year in conjunction with Unexpected Productions. And so I teach a class, and that's one of the things that I say is, like, the first time I got on stage, I'd been performing for, 10, 15 years in an improv sketch capacity.
Yeah.
I don't remember my first performance. I blacked out before I got on stage.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, have a couple trembling glimpses in my memory, but that's it. It was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. And it was an open mic. You know, it was an open mic in the basement of a comedy club, in front of 30 people. And it was the most terrifying thing I'd ever done. So... and I've jumped out of an airplane, so it was more terrifying than that. It really is, and it's just part of our nature.
I just think that's got to be one of the scariest things ever.
It's
up there, and I've played in bands before and stuff, but without having like a guitar there.
Oh yeah,
to hide behind.
Yeah. Or shoes to gaze at.
like we were talking about earlier.
Exactly.
I just think I would be mortified.
Yeah, it's.
Doing something like that. And especially if your jokes aren't working. What's that feel like?
What does it feel like
to bomb? What does it feel like to bomb? Every comedian goes through that.
Yeah,
I'm not singling you out here.
It's really painful. Well, bombing sucks, and it's just not fun.
Yeah, yeah. You're just standing there, the crowd's not into it. I mean, you got to have a good crowd to make a good show, right? It's part crowd,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the whole package is important,
right?
Obviously,
right.
You can't really blame the crowd. You do, but you can't. You shouldn't, but you do. you blame them. The audience has something to do with it. It's no matter how good or how bad the audience is, it just doesn't, it doesn't feel good to be bombing up there on stage. And what's, I think, probably one of the most frustrating aspects of it is it's a fear that you're standing there on stage consciously going, this shouldn't be hurting me as bad as it's hurting me, but it's hurting me really bad. You know what I mean? It's an irrational pain. It's an irrational fear. That fear of getting up on stage at an open mic is like, you're not going to die. You're going to be fine. Even if you're not going to look as stupid as 30% of the people that are here. Why are you so afraid?
But you can't
rationalize it. So you have to learn to live with it. You know what I mean?
You can't
squish it because you just have to learn to kind of accept it and acknowledge it and work with it, I guess. Give you a little example, the first time I ever performed stand-up, I should go back a little bit. I the first time I ever performed just straight-up jokes, me telling my jokes, was a terrifying experience. The first time I ever tried stand-up, in a way, was a whole – it was more of a performance piece that I put together. And I did it a year before I started hitting stand-up comedy hard. I went to Giggles Comedy Club here in the User District.
Which is now Jiggles.
Which is now – yeah. It's honestly, more dreams have died in that building than any other building on the planet. If you had a spiritual topographical map of the planet, there would be a huge crater where Giggles is located in the U-District in Seattle.
Yeah.
So I went there and I had a whole performance art bit where I made an audio tape that was Stuart Schmechner's So You Want to Be a Stand-Up intro to comedy audio instructional series tape.
Okay.
So it was like an audio instructional series tape.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got on stage as a person who was trying stand-up for the first time, which I was.
Yeah.
And I pushed play.
That's
on
a really good idea, by the way.
Yeah, it was a great way to just kind of break over that fear. It's
yeah,
like, this
yeah.
is a performance yeah. piece. Even if I bomb, it's a performance piece. You know what I
right,
mean?
Right,
right. It's a nice, safe way of kind of easing into it.
Yeah.
Hit play, and there was a little intro music, and it was like, so you want to be a comedian? Well, wise guy, you've made the first step in ordering Dwight Hershing's So You Want to Be a Comedian, you know, instructional audio series. Step one, introduce yourself. So, you know, and then I hit pause,
and
I walk
yourself.
Forward, and meanwhile, my persona is I'm a guy who's wearing a Hawaiian shirt, drenched in sweat from head to toe.
Wait, was this real sweat, or did you kind of
no,
douse yourself with water?
No, I went into the bathroom
okay.
and doused
okay.
myself with water, but yeah, there was yeah. a lot of real sweat there, too. I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt and matching Hawaiian shoes.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
I want to be a comedian. And then I'm missing a hand. I'm wearing a jacket, but I'm missing a hand,
yeah, yeah.
which comes into play a little later in the piece. and then I step forward, and in the most trembling, nervous voice I could muster, I say, hi, I'm a comedian, Kevin, get ready to laugh. And then I stand there in an awkward silence for a second, and I step back and I hit play again. And the instructional series goes, excellent. Notice how the audience reacted to you. You know what I mean? And it's
right,
like,
right.
this
yeah.
audio tape is like leading me through my yeah, first yeah. stand-up set.
Did that get a laugh?
It actually, again, you know, eight people, but yeah, it was
right,
it was
right.
great, and more importantly, I was proud of it. I was like, this is really entertaining. Like for me, I'm like, this is funny. I would be laughing at this.
Oh,
if
totally.
I
would
so,
be cracking up.
Yeah,
at that point.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was a lot of fun. So yeah. then later on in the tape, it leads me through things to do. Like it says, you know, if you start to lose the audience, pick out a random member of the audience and insult them. And so I pick right. out a random member of the audience and give them the worst insult. You know, it was like,
yeah.
hey, you look. You're a big fat guy, and it was like the skinniest guy in the room, you know. And
right,
he's like,
right.
I don't know what
yeah.
he's talking about. And then we're like, you probably have your own donut at Winchell's called "The Fat Guy's Gonna Eat Me." Beep, and then I hit play again, and it just leads me right back into the series. And then,
have you brought that one back?
No,
or
do you, I've only done it once. Yeah,
yeah. Do you? So when you come up with new material, do you just throw away the old stuff, or
no,
do you keep it around?
You know, and that's kind of the beauty of the position I'm in now, and it's really
yeah.
it's exactly what I want to be doing, and that is I have tons of opportunities to get up and just perform material as I write it. Like I said, I host or just perform on the open
right,
mics every
right.
Friday night.
Yeah.
So I've always got an opportunity to try out new things, but then. The nature of our organization is, you know, we produce stand-up heavy variety shows, essentially.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm constantly being given opportunities to, hey, come up with a creative way to plug, the sponsor's product. Oh, okay. So I'll come out and I'll do a public service announcement for, you know, whatever, Dewar's Irish Whiskey or whatever our sponsor
right,
is that
right.
week. And, and so I'm always also getting to exercise that end of, my, I don't know, artistic whatever I'm getting to come up with creative sketches and creative videos that we produce and then show or so it's like I'm always getting to try these new fun things out, and then I'm also getting to perform stand-up as well.
That's
so it's great. Yeah,
yeah,
it's really fun.
Yeah, and that's gotta you definitely get some practice there too, like
oh, yeah.
when you're
yeah.
you know just when you're emceeing for the open mic or something like that. So that's got to be good.
Yeah, I mean, emceeing is a really great way if you're
yeah.
Especially if you're just starting out. If you can get on board with some show or something like that in an MC capacity, it's just a really great way of being on stage in front of audiences and just getting more and more comfortable with that position. You know what
right,
I mean? With
right.
that being in that situation. And,
yeah.
It just makes you a better comedian so much faster than if you're just getting up and doing your same three jokes over and over again at an
yeah,
open mic,
yeah.
you're going to stagnate pretty quickly. But if you're constantly having to get up and deal with changing dimensions in the room and audience dimension, and things like that, you're just going to grow so much faster. So
yeah, totally.
It's really
cool. Well, hey, let's take our second musical break here. We are featuring music by the band Genital Hospital from their new EP that is available on genitalhospital.bandcamp.com. The EP's name is Ball My Children. And this song, let's see, we're going to go with Extra Lube here. And when we come back, we're going to have more of the Air Raid Podcast for you, the listener, with our special guest today, Kevin Heider. And maybe when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about the comedy scene here in Seattle and how you guys all interact together. Yeah. All right. I think that'll be interesting. Don't you, Kevin? That's going to be fantastic. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Extra Lube by Genital Hospital. Yeah, that's it. That stuff was just crazy. And now, see, my phone is going off. That was Extra Lube by Genital Hospital off their EP that you can get on Bandcamp called Ball My Children. And we were actually just talking about this guy that's in this band. He's the bass player, Chaz Roberts. And he did... He used to do the Seattle Semi-Pro Wrestling,
yeah.
Which I didn't know that you were involved with.
People's World, like a comedy, did some crossover stuff. And then
gotcha,
Get Loaded.
Gotcha.
Emmett Montgomery, who is one of the founders of the organization, was also involved with Get Loaded.
One
of the producers
of
that show.
Oh, my God. He was super funny in that.
Yeah. And so...
And just so awkward.
Yes, perfect for that show, definitely.
Yeah,
it was great. And we did quite a few little crossover things.
Yeah.
And
you were the Easter Bunny, and you used to wrestle.
I was the Easter Bunny, and I wrestled Ronald McFondle. Yeah.
And so you just informed me of something that I had no idea. I thought it was all kind of scripted, like fights and stuff like that. But you said some of that stuff was kind of real.
Oh no! It's scripted, but it's scripted, and there are fights. It's just, it's more real than professional wrestling. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, well some of that stuff has got to hurt.
Oh yeah, and these guys are, you know, they're careful enough, but same time,
yeah.
I would call it a cross between actual professional wrestling and backyard wrestling. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right,
like
yeah.
it's
hobo
enough,
wrestling.
It's enough hobo wrestling to be really entertaining, but not feel dirty afterwards for
right,
watching.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like afterwards,
nobody died.
You don't have to go home and do the rape slide in the shower after you've seen a Seattle Semi-Pro wrestling.
One of my favorite things about that show was that you could you know, they had, what was it, like $2 PBR tall boys.
Yeah.
And you could drink these things down and then throw the empty cans at
right.
the wrestlers
yeah.
during the show, which I thought was just a great way to get the audience into it, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got pelted with a million of those. Actually,
yeah. That's
got
to hurt, too, though. If it hits right.
I got hit with a full one.
Oh.
But I was... fortunately, I was in my full-on Easter Bunny costume. So I had a huge foam head on, but it hit my head. And I was like, dude, if that... if I wasn't wearing this huge head, I'd be really pissed.
One of my friends, actually, one show that we went to one of the shows in a big group, and one of the friends just picked... He thought the can was empty and just picked it and threw it up there, and it was like half full, and he got 86th after that throw, too.
Yeah, yeah. They, which was, they try pretty hard.
Totally. But that was a great show. And then Get Loaded, which we talked about with Nancy Guppy a little bit, with Emmett Montgomery. Now, is that stuff is no longer going on, I don't think, right?
Get Loaded?
Yeah, didn't Get Loaded end?
I believe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not going on.
Yeah, that ended a little while ago.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, let's talk about your comedy again.
Yeah.
And talk about kind of the relationship between comedians here in Seattle. Because you always hear about comedians, they're very cutthroat.
Yeah.
A group of people. You know, some of them, I'm not going to say all, but most comedians are probably a little bit self-conscious about their own comedy and, you know, want to be the big fish in a small pond, so to speak.
Yeah.
Does that happen much here in Seattle, or is the group here that you guys have pretty willing to share the stage?
I think it happens as much as it happens in any, you know, in any city, in any comedy community.
Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah, there's elements of that. I mean, as we were talking about before, earlier on in the show, you know, I mean, comedians are broken people, you know, and so it's it's a very personal thing, you know. It's hard, like I said, it's hard to bomb, it's hard to get on stage and not be funny, and it's hard to feel like you're not as funny as, you know, somebody else or as what the you know, is going on over there and stuff. And so, there's that type of stuff. I would say that's actually, you know, why we started doing what we were doing is just to try and find a way to
help each other out a little bit.
Sort of circle the wagons for comedians in Seattle, stand-up comedians, and then above and beyond that, and something that that we're focusing really hard on right now and that I'm really excited about is just fostering the relationships between the different mediums of comedy. Improv community. There's a whole improv community, you know. There's a whole sketch comedy community, you know, and it's ridiculous that a lot of these communities exist as sort of
their own entity.
Autonomous things. When it's like, well, there should be cross promotion, there should be cross communication, there should be cross artistic collaboration going on constantly. That's where art comes from, you know.
Yeah.
And so that's really what as an organization we have been focusing on. And as I mentioned, we've been really successful with that. I'm really excited about the education program we just started with Unexpected Productions. Kind of contacted us.
Which is they are a great improv group.
Yeah.
They do all the shows at where was it? Near the gum wall.
Yeah, Market Theater.
Market Theater. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're a fantastic company, and we've done a lot of things with them over the years, and this year they kind of approached us and said, hey, we're kind of interested in doing first it was a sketch class. We'd like to offer a sketch class. And
we're like,
well, that's great. We've got some really great sketch writers and performers in our organization, so we can provide instructors if you guys want to, you know, promote it and put it out there and give us a space to do the class. And then branching out from that, they were like, well, what about stand-up? We should have a stand-up class. And so we were like, well, that's great, we can provide a stand-up class as well. And so it's kind of cool to be able to start we've always wanted to start sort of an education program, and now in working with other, you know, comedy arts organizations in Seattle, we've been able to sort of forge one out, and it's been going really well.
You're getting good turnout with that and everything.
Yeah, the classes have been filling up, and they've just been just above and beyond that. The quality has just been amazing. Like it's so much fun to, you know, intentionally sit down with a group of people for 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon let's talk about what we like about comedy, what's important about comedy, and then let's do exercises that kind of demonstrate kind of the things that you know, that we really want to focus on in our craft,
yeah.
And then be able to take that out into the world and just become better, you know, better performers as a result of it. So,
it's got to be kind of hard sometimes too to like try to get some people out of their shell a little bit.
Yeah.
Are most people that are coming to this class already kind of out there? You know,
no, not at all. It's a completely broad spectrum. People are coming to the class at every level. I've got some students who have never actually performed on any capacity in front of an audience. You know what I mean? And they will for their final performance, which is coming up here. So, and then I've got people who have done improv for 10 years, like me when I started doing stand up, and they were like, I just want to try this out and see what it's all about. And so,
nice.
So yeah, it's the whole gambit.
Nice.
The whole gambit.
Nice. Yeah. So how do you do your comedy? I mean, that is a terribly worded question.
How do you do? So, I put it in the hole and then
I turn this crank
with a stick
and I tell Terry. I tell Terry to saran wrap it and put it in the refrigerator. How do I say this? Where do you pull from to create like an act? Bits and jokes. Like, do you actually write jokes, or do you speak a lot about personal experience? You know, how do you formulate your comedy act?
Yeah, you know, I try and do a little bit of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely have, you know, a feature set that is a solid 20 minutes of you know, sort of
more of an act or
traditional style bits that I do, which I enjoy, and I like doing that. But then I, like I said, because of the sort of position that I'm in, I'm constantly in new situations that call for something different, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Like, I might be one week performing, I've got to do a set in front of a retirement community or in front of, at a park downtown or something. And then, the next show might be something that's in a black box theater and it's for a more theater, hungry audience. And so something like
that. So you're actually doing something like an act rather than like stand up.
Well,
observational comedy or something like that.
I would say in those situations, I might do something more personal. I might be like, oh, this is an opportunity for me to tell a story. You know what I mean?
So I write
a whole story out and punch it up and make sure that there are beats in it and things like that.
Are there things that you're better at then? I mean, because that sounds like you're trying to do like a full spectrum of different performance.
Different styles, I don't know.
What do you like best? What do you like doing best?
I like it all. I do. I am. It really depends on the context. I think context is everything. And so if I'm performing a more intimate show in front of 20 people or something, and I'm telling a personal story and people are really engaging with it, that feels really satisfying. But opening for Chris Hardwick at the Showbox Theater, and there's
open for him one time?
I did just recently. Yeah.
Oh no,
just
shit!
Last year, yeah. And so there's and there's 500 people there, and they're and they're there for a comedy show, and I just I do my solid jokes or my solid bits, and when that goes well, that feels fantastic. You know, that's really great too. So I wouldn't say that there's one that I enjoy better than the other. What I really enjoy is being able to have the tools in my toolbox that I can apply to whatever the situation calls for. And when that works, that feels really great. When it doesn't
do you ever have to do it kind of on the fly?
Pulling
stuff out of, okay, well, this isn't working for me. Like you've planned out that night. I'm going to go into, into my little black box and pull out.
And that's another skill, that you have to develop is if you're up there and you're not doing well with, your niece and nephew Christmas jokes, it's time to pull out a dick joke, or whatever. And
this is more of a fart crowd.
Yeah, this is more of a fart crowd. And even in those situations, I try and push the audience to not be, because that's probably what I least enjoy doing is pandering to people who are just like, I just want to hear about blowjobs. And I'm like, I don't, this is not what I like doing. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
okay,
I'll tell you a blowjob joke, but it's going to have a Kierkegaard reference in it. And you're going to have to accept that. Because I'm trying.
Because I'm a philosophy major.
I'm trying to make you a better person. There's something much bigger going on here than you can ever realize.
How would a blowjob joke kind of round out into with a Kierkegaard reference? How would that work?
I'd have to put something together.
Will you? You've got my you called my Google voicemail line a little bit earlier, so yeah, that's your homework.
All right, I'll leave the Kierkegaard. All right, Aaron, the Kierkegaard blowjob joke is on its way. Jeez. Exactly. And that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
It's like, yeah. That's what I least like doing.
Yeah.
But actually, that would be pretty redemptive if I can.
If you can pull something like that off. That's good shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So do you ever get hecklers? I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
How do you deal with a heckler?
You know, there's different schools of thought on how you handle that. I'm not an aggressive comedian for the most part. I will just ignore it and move on. And that's really what the audience wants pretty quickly. When you do that, for the most part, a heckler shuts up because the audience turns on them really quickly.
Yeah.
Because the audience is on your side. You know, you need to know that. Getting on the stage, the audience wants you to succeed.
Right,
There's a couple...
Well, that's what they're there for.
There's a couple
for.
Of D-bags in the audience who don't, and the rest of the audience will. But then above and beyond that, if you actually have to address it... I try and actually be nice to the heckler. If you can actually talk to the heckler in a nice way, it makes the audience hate them more and more until just the sheer magnitude of the weight of hatred that
I was about to say that, God, you're just such a nice comedian.
Yeah.
You know, but then you have this little, I mean, that's evil.
Oh yeah,
that is
evil. Yeah. Oh, don't get me wrong. Yeah, it comes from a place of darkness.
Right.
But it looks shiny and pretty and nice. And so usually, you can usually get the audience to just do that work for you, because there's no question who the asshole is in the room. It's the guy who thinks he's a comedian but doesn't have the balls to get on stage and prove it. You know what I mean?
Is that what and I was thinking about this last night, because knowing that you were coming on the show today, and I was like, kind of, you know, formulating some questions in my head. As you can see, like, I've got nothing written down.
No, yeah.
Totally ill-prepared, except for my my genital hospital plugs here and song breaks. But so I was thinking about it last night. I was like, man, because that's one thing. Like, I've always loved stand-up comedy, always kind of, you know, daydreamed about doing it someday. Mm-hmm. And you know, I always wanted to be the funny guy and stuff, but I always try to think of jokes and things like that. And then when I think of something that I think is going to be very funny, mm-hmm. then I think of what the audience would say. Or if there was like some, you know, asshole mm-hmm. sitting there, like what would be the heckler's response to that? And how would I extinguish that? You know, that seems like it's something that you need to hone your skills on as well. Being a stand-up, like dealing with people that are going to speak up and stuff.
Right. Like be prepared.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Have some prepared.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've seen a lot of comedians who have obviously prepared responses for hecklers and it's a good thing to have. It's a good thing to have as well, sort of at your disposal. I wouldn't spend too much time focusing on it. Essentially that you're sort of preparing yourself for the worst possible experience. And I think that in a way, sort of emotionally and psychologically, that makes you a defensive person when you get on stage. And that's not really
you don't want to be that guy.
Right.
Yeah.
You want to get on stage assuming that we're all here to have a good
time. You don't
want to
walk up there.
You don't
want to
walk on stage
say.
Assuming that the audience is there to combat
Fuck
you.
Fuck all of you people. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the first thing that you say.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a good, that would not be a good night.
Right.
Yeah. But I guess, okay. So what I kind of went off on a tangent there with that previous question, but that's got to be, you know, being a heckler has to be vested in some like facet of that person's life where they want to be up there, like, and doing what you do, but they're too afraid to do it, like you said, or they're just like, oh, what is it? It's like the class clown almost, right?
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, they always got to be like, well, this person's getting all the attention right now.
Right. Yeah.
I got to say something.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta get into the show.
Right, right.
My voice needs to be on the record.
I've actually, and I, you know, thinking of it right now, like I've done that once, and I felt so bad after doing it.
And most people do. Like, yeah, and most people who have any sense of self awareness, recognize very quickly what I did was really dumb and shitty, and you know what I mean.
And I was so, drunk too, so that you know that was that was part of it.
Right.
But I remember even...
Which means you felt it even through the alcohol.
Right.
So you know that it was a real...
Yeah.
A real feeling that you need to now, you need to recognize and respond accordingly.
Well,
right?
now that you say that too, like now I'm thinking like, whoa, that it must have been really bad.
Yeah. You were thinking, oh, that was probably inappropriate. Your friends are like, I'm not talking to Aaron for a year.
That's
like,
why that guy has never called me back again.
Exactly.
Wow. That sucks. That sucks. Well, Kevin, let's plug your wares. Where can we find People's Republic? What's coming up next for Laughhole?
Yeah, we've got a lot of really, really super exciting shows coming up. First of all, as we already mentioned, any given Friday night, any given Friday at the coffee shop, the open mics are just a blast. I think I've had, telling you before the show, it's like it's the highlight of my week. Like,
and I've had a great time at those things, and they're a lot of fun. A lot of good. New comedians that are coming up and
I think you know
ones that are honing their skills.
We've really been intentional about fostering an environment that that gives people an opportunity to feel comfortable trying new stuff, to feel comfortable failing. That's where the good stuff comes from. Is failing over and over again at doing it not the right way and then finally dialing it in. So
and then just becoming a broken person.
Recognizing you're a broken person, not becoming. That's
oh, come on. All right. Yeah.
So all broken people are welcome. It's a super fun night. And then of course, Laughhole, first and third Wednesday of every month, is our flagship show. Yeah. And
is it always at Chop Suey?
Yeah, Chop Suey is our home for that, and it's always a fun show. I'm really excited about the ones we have coming up. We this coming Wednesday are doing the first ever live performance of another podcast, Who Charted, hosted by Howard Kramer and Kulop, which is on the Earwolf Podcast Network. And it's a really fun show. As we understood, they'd never done a live version of it. And that's really something that I've enjoyed seeing are these sort of live podcasts at Bumbershoot and things
through. Right, right, yeah, totally.
And so, we as an organization, we're kind of like, well, why don't we contact those guys and see if they want to do a live show? We've got a great opportunity for them to come and plug their show into a community that is – they've got a lot of fans up here.
We've
got the perfect venue and the perfect format for this show. And then we just had to come up with an awesome guest, and we were like, we should contact Sir Mix-a-Lot and get him on this. And we contacted him, and turns out he's actually dropping a new album next month.
Are you serious?
Yes. So it's perfect timing. Oh, we were like, let's get Sir Mix-a-Lot. He can promote his new album and be on this show. So it's live, first ever live Who Charted at Chop Suey with special guest Sir Mix-a-Lot is in the
mix. I cannot wait to hear that.
Yeah, well, or see it.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you to come on Wednesday?
Hey.
On Wednesday night.
Yeah, yeah. I got a kid now, so I have to work around the baby.
We can work the baby into the show.
That would be great.
All right.
Yeah, we'll kind of start honing her skills as a stand-up comedian from the age of 6 months.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, sounds like a good idea.
And then coming up in December, this is kind of our winter season. We've got December 1st, Nick Thune is going to be coming up. He's from here, the comedian Nick Thune. And he's been doing great in Los Angeles and
very funny guy,
doing a lot of really fun projects. And so we're bringing him up to do a special performance at the Intimon on December 1st.
Oh, nice.
And
nice.
It's going to be. That's in conjunction with we're working with Unexpected Productions on that. So we're going to have sort of an improv element to the show, and then Nick's going to headline that show. So
nice.
I think it's just going to be a really fun sort of Christmas show.
And kind of
one that you could bring your family. It's a theater show, but it's just going to be a really fun night.
Right, and you've got Dana Gould coming up, right?
And then coming up a week after that, Dana Gould is going to be headlining Laughhole, which is definitely a highlight of my artistic career. Like, I'm so excited for that show. He's the father of alternative comedy. Yeah, and he's headlining our show.
I'm really looking forward to that. My wife and I have always been huge fans of Seinfeld, and his reoccurring character on Seinfeld was just great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What was it? He was Jerry Seinfeld's, like, nephew? Maybe he wasn't nephew or cousin or something like that. Who would always get really, when he'd get, you know, really anxious and stuff, he'd just go and dig holes in Central Park. yeah. And hide in them.
Well, we've got him coming up to headline that show. And the night after, he's actually coming up with a couple of his friends from Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, cool, yeah.
And they're going to be doing the live commentary to a screening of the movie Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Oh, no way.
That's going to be epic. And we're doing that in conjunction with Seattle International Film Festival.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
At their new theater space.
That's going to be so cool.
Yeah, we got some if you're a comedy nerd, if you're at all interested in stand-up comedy and sort of the alternative comedy movement, those are shows that are not to be missed.
That's going
to
be a great couple of months for you guys.
Yeah,
and very busy.
Yes.
Yeah. 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 So what are the websites? Where can we find this stuff?
PeoplesRepublicComedy.com.
Okay.
We've got a new website. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
We just launched it this year and. It's very comprehensive. It's got everything from awesome clips of shows that we've done to awesome clips of shows, you know, of performers that we've got coming up,
as well
as information on our education program and the other shows that we produce around Seattle. So
wonderful.
Check it out.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, sir, for coming on the show.
Yeah.
And hopefully sometime in the future we can have you back on.
All right. Thanks for having me. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. This has been the Air Raid Podcast, episode 70. Can you believe it? We are closing in on 100 episodes. Only 30 more to go before I hit the self-destruct button. You can find our show, www.air-raid.net. And please go to iTunes, download the show there, and leave us a review or a star rating, because that stuff really does help us out in the future. We're going to go out today a little bit more genital hospital for you. I can barely get through saying that name without cracking up. But this song is called Ejector Seat. Once again, you can find them at genitalhospital.bandcamp.com. And also, I think they've got a Facebook page, too. So go out here with Ejector Seat on this episode 70, and we will see you guys next week. Yeah!